modern counselors try to pretend that our sin does not exist. They do so by redefining it.
That was Dr. Doug McLaughlin, our speaker on Living Redemptively, a daily program featuring messages from God's Word designed to help you have an authentic walk with the living God. Dr. McLaughlin served for many years as the pastor of Fourth Baptist Church in Plymouth, Minnesota, and has also served as a Bible college and seminary professor, and has traveled around the world speaking at pastors and educators conferences. We invite you to join us now as Dr. Doug McLaughlin shares today's lesson.
The joy of the kind-hearted. And it's based on Matthew, the 5th chapter, and verse 7. Oh, the bliss of the merciful. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. The ancient world was not a world which admired mercy. And as you study the history of the ancient world, the various strains of that history, and as you study contemporary history, you come immediately face to face with the truth that mercy, in the biblical sense of that term, is a distinctively Christian virtue. A Christless world is always a calloused world. And callousness in our experience might be a revelation that we are without Christ, that we have never truly been born again. And mercy was never a characteristic of the pagan life of the ancient world. It's tragic to study the history of the New Testament era and to see the merciless elements that characterize that era. In the Jewish world, there was a certain element of mercilessness. The Jews were merciless, for example, to the sinner, and they were merciless to the Gentiles. As Jesus saw it in the New Testament era, he would say, "There is joy in heaven over one sinner who repents," Luke 15 and verse 7. The rabbis looked at it altogether differently. The rabbi said, "There is joy before God when those who provoke him perish from the world." The rabbi said that the Gentiles were to be crushed like snakes, and that the Gentiles were created only to be fuel for the fires of hell. But Jesus said, "I have come as a light to lighten the Gentiles," Luke 2 and verse 32. And I thank God for that verse because I'm one of those Gentiles. And I thank God that the light which our Lord Jesus Christ has brought has expelled the darkness and has extricated and set free those who were held captive by the darkness. Jesus believed in salvation. The rabbis believed in obliteration. There was a certain savagery, a certain merciless element that characterized the ancient world, even in a Jewish context. But this was not a mood that was germane only to the Jews. It was a problem, I think, that was intensified among the Greeks and the Romans. In the Greco-Roman world, life was merciless as well, and especially with reference to two classes of individuals, one with reference to slaves, and oddly enough, secondly, with reference to children. In the ancient world, slaves, in the Roman Greco world, slaves were no different from a living tool. And what consideration do you give to a tool? The historians of that day give us a little insight into the character of men in that day. Pliny tells of a man who flung his slave to the savage lampreys, that is, sea creatures, in the pool of his courtyard because the slave had stumbled and broken a goblet. And so he executed him. Juvenal tells of masters. We read of it in his history. Juvenal tells of masters who delight in the sound of a cruel flogging as though it were music in their ears. There was this brutality of treatment with respect to slaves, and there were 60 million slaves in the ancient world, 500,000 slaves in the city of Corinth alone. But this was a brutality, this was a savagery, this was an element of mercilessness that extended itself not only to sinners and Gentiles and slaves, whether in a Jewish or a Greco-Roman context, but also to children. In the ancient world, people practiced what they called the exposure of children. That is to say, the unwanted child was simply thrown away. He was thrown out like refuse or garbage. We have a document that has come down all the way from the ancient world. It's from a man on a trip away from his wife. His name is Hilarion. He writes to his wife Alice in 1 BC, and he says, in anticipation of the birth of a child into their family, he says, without blinking an eye in the narrative, he says, if it is a boy, let it live. If it is a girl, throw it out. That was the spirit of the ancient world with respect to children. The child who was weak or sickly or ill-formed had little chance of survival in the ancient world. Plato said any defective child must be done away with. Aristotle said, no deformed child shall be reared. Seneca, the great moralist and counselor to emperors, contemporary of the first century, Seneca said, we drown children who at birth are weakly and abnormal. I tell you, there was a savagery that attached itself to the character of the ancient world. The sheer callousness of the pagan world is an almost incredible and inconceivable thing to a man who has known and experienced Christian mercy. And when Jesus Christ came, he shattered the morality and the moral callousness of the ancient world and introduced a whole new way of life, a whole new ethic of life, when he said, he shattered the morality of that ancient world when he said, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. I would suggest that the whole of our life ought to become an expression and a proclamation of the fact that we are merciful. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. The whole of our life ought to become an expression and a proclamation of the fact that we are merciful. And if I can do so very quickly, I'd like to share with you three facets of mercy with which we must deal in order to properly understand this beatitude. First, we want to look at the properties of mercy. And I want to give you a twofold word. One, what it is not, and two, what it is. First, the properties of mercy. And then, very quickly, I want to show you the practice of mercy in the New Testament narrative. And we'll look at two examples. One a little bit in detail, one we'll just skim. We'll look at the Good Samaritan who risked his life. And very quickly, we'll survey the Good Shepherd who gave his life. And then, for a moment, we'll touch on the prospect of mercy. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Now first, let's look at the properties of mercy. What are we talking about when we talk about mercy? We have to be very careful in precisely defining this concept. First, we want to discuss what it is not. First, I want to mention just one negative. To be merciful does not mean to be easygoing. Many people think that mercy means to smile at transgression or lawbreaking. What does it matter, they say? Pretend it doesn't exist. Sweep it under the rug. That is what some people think mercy is, but they are wrong. That is not biblical mercy. You will remember that God is rich in mercy, Ephesians 2 and verse 4. God is merciful, but this does not mean that God winks at sin. It does not mean that God does not care about law breaking. It does not mean that he pretends it doesn't happen. That is not the essence of mercy. In his mercy, God confronts us face to face with our depravity. He doesn't sweep it under the rug. He doesn't pretend that it does not exist. He confronts us face to face with our depravity, with our duplicity, our double-mindedness, with our complicity. We comply with sin. We choose to sin. We wish to sin. It's native to our nature. God confronts us with those things. In his mercy, first he humbles us so that ultimately he can exalt us. First he deals with our sin honestly and up front in personal confrontation, and then he delivers us from our sin. Mercy is never that quality which pretends that sin does not exist. That's the whole failure of modern counselors. Modern counselors try to pretend that our sin does not exist. They do so by redefining it, or at the very least by blaming someone else. I think perhaps their motives might be pure, I'm not sure, but their methods are shattering. Whenever we try to redefine sin and thus eliminate it, or blame somebody else for our malformities or our malfunctions, we are never really helping ourselves. They think that's merciful. It is not merciful. This never helps a man because he knows intuitively what he is. No matter who the counselor is, if he tells me I'm not a sinner, I know intuitively I'm a sinner. I know he's wrong. He may quiet my concerns for a moment. He may pacify my emotional disturbance temporarily, but he does me no ultimate good. God knows how to do me good. God tells me what I am. He says, you are a sinner. God shows me what I can be. And then God in his mercy helps me to become all that he intended for me to become. That is true mercy. Mercy, what it is not. It is not smiling or winking at sin or pretending that it doesn't exist or that it doesn't matter or sweeping it under the rug. Mercy is never a compromise of holiness and truth and righteousness. And that's the kind of God we have. He's a holy and a righteous and a true God. And mercy is never a compromise of those virtues in the nature of God. The psalmist says mercy and truth are met together, Psalm 85:10. Righteousness and peace have kissed each other, and any definition of mercy which comes at the expense of truth and holiness is an unbiblical mercy. Mercy deals with sin and then delivers from it. It refuses to pretend that it doesn't exist. Well, that's what it is not. It is not the compromise of God's holiness. Well, then what is it? What is mercy? I'd like to define it and for a moment delineate it. And I would say, in terms of a definition, we have to expand it for a moment. I would say in terms of defining mercy that first of all, mercy is the outgoing love of God reflected and reproduced in the Christian. Mercy is the outgoing love of God reflected and reproduced in the Christian. It's outgoing in the sense that it can never remain inside of us. Mercy is never passively waiting opportunities to serve. It is actively pursuing them. It is outgoing love, the outgoing love of God reflected and reproduced in the life of the Christian. It is the attitude of the man for whom the needs of others are more claimant than his own. He looks at another man's needs, and the needs of that other man have a more powerful claim over him than his own needs do. He knows that he has needs, but he sees the needs and the sufferings and the sorrows and the sins of others, and he's committed to meeting those needs. That's the spirit of mercy. It's the attitude of the man for whom the needs of others are more claimant than his own, and the sorrows of others are more piercing and poignant than his own. In other words, the merciful are the fellowship of the dead to themselves, but alive to Christ and others. The merciful are the fellowship of the dead to themselves, but alive to Christ and to others. They give themselves to meet not their own needs, but the needs of others. And in the meeting of the needs of others, their own needs are met.
Thank you for joining us for Living Redemptively with Dr. Doug McLaughlin. Dr. McLaughlin served for many years as the senior pastor of Fourth Baptist Church in Plymouth, Minnesota. For more information on Fourth Baptist, visit their website at fourthbaptist.org. That's fourthbaptist.org. Living Redemptively is produced in partnership with Harvest Ministries on the island of Guam. If you would like to receive a copy of all the messages in this series, or if you have any questions about what you've heard, we invite you to contact Living Redemptively at P.O. Box 23189, Barragata, Guam 96921. That's P.O. Box 23189, Barragata, Guam 96921. You can call area code 671-477-6341, extension 260. That's area code 671-477-6341, extension 260. You can also download this program in a daily podcast. Learn more at hbcguam.net. That's hbcguam.net. Finally, if you'd like to email Living Redemptively, email khmg@hbcguam.net. Coming up next time on Living Redemptively.
You cannot show mercy unless you have the power either to hurt or to help.
That's coming up next time on Living Redemptively, helping you to live an authentic Christian life.